Do we have a bridge open on them? Just for listening, or who? Why do we have that? Just. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, just in case somebody wants. We're good. All right. All right. Well, good afternoon. This is an informal hearing on case number PU-21-386. It is about 12:45 on Wednesday, December 15th. I'm Commissioner Julie Fedorchak, joined with Commissioners Brian Crosius and Randy Christman. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Christman, do you?
No, I do not.
And Brian has said he doesn't either. So we'll just jump right into things. This is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we will close the hearing and issue a notice of hearing. The applicant goes first in this type of proceeding, but before starting, I want our staff to introduce themselves, and we just have one.
Victor Shutt, staff.
All righty, very good. And then we can go around the table with the rest of you, and then you guys can take it away. Before we get to that, any handouts, materials, as well as a recording of this proceeding will probably be considered evidence. We'll ask in the end if anybody objects to that. And with that, we will turn it over to you, Allison, and you can introduce your team, or however you guys want to do it. Garrett, whoever goes first. Okay.
Good afternoon, Commission. Thank you for having us. My name is Allison Mann with MDU Resources Group, here today representing Montana Dakota Utility Company. Here with me today, to my left, is Larry Oswald, the Director of Business Development and Energy Services. And to my right, we have Garrett Senger, Executive Vice President of Regulatory Affairs, and Travis Jacobson, Director of Regulatory Affairs. We are here today to discuss Montana Dakota's application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to construct and operate certain natural gas distribution facilities. This request has been filed pursuant to North Dakota Century Code, Chapter 49-3.1, and the proposed system would serve portions of Cass and Richland counties, including the city of Kindred, North Dakota. The company has prepared a presentation to further elaborate on this request. With that, I will turn it over to Larry for the presentations.
Yeah, good afternoon, Commissioners.
Good afternoon.
Gonna start out here with this first slide. This is regarding our Eastern North Dakota Wahpeton expansion project. And I know we visited about this a few weeks ago in the public information exchange meeting, but kind of wanted to provide a little more details surrounding that project, because that really led to us filing the application for the certificate of public convenience and necessity for the area that we requested in the application. So I'm going to go back and forth a little bit between the slide and the map, and really felt it was would be good to kind of explain how Wahpeton, North Dakota gets their natural gas supply today. They are served natural gas from our Great Plains transmission line that interconnects with the Viking transmission line near Burgess, Minnesota. And that is approximately 66-mile line. It's a combination of 8-inch steel and 6-inch steel. It's 8-inch steel to right around Fergus Falls, Minnesota. And then it's 6-inch all the way into Breckenridge, Minnesota, where we have our town border station in Breckenridge. And the that town border station serves the Breckenridge distribution system, and then also our intermediate pressure line that brings natural gas underneath the Red River to serve the Wahpeton Industrial Park and our distribution system in Wahpeton, North Dakota. So all of our gas supply comes from that transmission line into Wahpeton today. That line, our capacity to serve, we have a lot of interruptible customers on that line, a lot of large industrials near the end of the line, both in Minnesota and in North Dakota. And that caused a lot of interruptions in service to our interruptible customers, and that led them to want a greater level of service to meet their needs of those interruptible customers. So what we did is we worked with our interruptible customers in Wahpeton, and there was a total of 18 of them. We received firm capacity commitments for 10 years from the in-service date of the project from 16 of the 18 interruptible customers. And that allowed us to make the commitment to WBI to get, for WBI Energy to bring the proposed project from Mapleton, North Dakota down to Wahpeton, which is actually the next map, which apologize on the screen, it's going the wrong direction, but hopefully in your handout. You can turn the page a little bit.
Can I ask a quick question about the interruptible customers that converted? So why were they interruptible and why were they willing to go to firm?
We didn't have enough capacity to offer them firm to meet all their needs on the existing transmission line, so they had to be interruptible service in order to get natural gas service.
I see. There was no other choice.
Correct.
Okay. So they had their own backup facility or generators or whatever.
In some cases, they had a backup, and in some cases, they just would cease their operations.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you.
Okay. So kind of moving into the new project, WBI Energy would be constructing this line. It would start from Mapleton, North Dakota, where they did their Valley Expansion Project in 2018, I believe they brought that into service, and it would extend approximately 60 miles through Cass County, coming near the community of Kindred and also the community of Walcott and Colfax. And Walcott and Colfax are in Richland County, and then ending, with a town border station on the north side of Wahpeton. And from there, we would come from wherever which we haven't defined the exact location of that town border station yet, depending on routing for WBI Energy, but then we would connect with that new town border station and connect to our intermediate pressure line that comes across today from Breckenridge, and that would serve the industrial park as well as our distribution system. So effectively, Wahpeton, North Dakota would now get all of their natural gas supply from our Montana-Dakota integrated gas supply system, versus today they'd get it through our Great Plains integrated natural gas supply system. Now that tie with our town border station in Breckenridge will be maintained, but there'll be a valve essentially that will be normally closed, and there'll be really two separate gas supply systems. But during system emergencies, we could flow gas, the way we have from the Minnesota side into Wahpeton, or we could supply into Minnesota if we had a system emergency somewhere. So it will create additional system security, for our Wahpeton, North Dakota customers as well as our Great Plains, Minnesota customers.
So can you say, you might have already said this, and I apologize if I missed it because I was thinking about something else that you said earlier. Why does it end up there northwest of Wahpeton and not over in Breckenridge on this map?
On this map? The proposed line is kind of on the north side of Wahpeton, near the industrial park is on the north side of Wahpeton, and that's where our intermediate pressure line, when it comes across, it goes all the way up into that industrial park. So it was really a point nearest for WBI to get close to so that we could connect with our intermediate pressure line is what will supply the entire distribution system of Wahpeton.
So that's where the connection is, just there northwest of Wahpeton.
Correct.
Thank you.
So will you be decreasing the contracted gas coming in on the Minnesota side? Lowering, if you will, just having a smaller commitment?
Essentially, there will be, the natural gas still comes through the Valley, WBI's Valley line, which comes from Viking near Felton, Minnesota. So it's essentially be moving some of that capacity there to reroute it.
That's right. That's right. Ties back up into Felton. Yeah.
Okay. So and this project is planned for fall of 2024 in service date. So maybe any other questions about the Wahpeton expansion project, maybe before I move in more to specific, you know, additional information about our application that we're here for today?
Just one other clarification. Does this need to be permitted, or is this a small enough line? Will you be doing a siting permit for the construction of this?
The WBI Energy is actually building lines, so it'll fall underneath within their FERC regulations, interstate transmission line.
So the project is contingent on FERC approval then of this as well?
Yeah.
So.
Do you know anything about that, where it is in that process?
I do not. I know they've went out, they've had permission to survey. They've held several landowner meetings for the landowners that they're looking to survey for potential easements. We have participated in those landowner meetings because there's also a lot of questions from those additional, you know, customers wanting natural gas service now that it's going to be in the area.
Sure.
So, but I'm not sure if they've officially made their application to FERC yet or not.
Got it. All right.
In Kindred, it will be within a mile, probably less than a mile of Kindred. Walcott is probably right around that mile, the way they've, the route that they've proposed, you know, that could switch depending upon, you know, the easements and different various factors. But for the route they have depicted today in that map, it should be within about a mile. Now, Colfax will probably be closer to 3 miles. To get to Colfax. Yes, we would have the laterals that we would come off of from WBI, we would look to have them as distribution.
If you sense any resistance or dragging feet on the FERC level, I suppose you guys won't, but through WBI on the permitting of this, just with you, just let us know. Be curious to see if there's any dragging feet on these new gas lines, because there's such a push for electrification, especially by FERC. So,
yep.
Is the new commissioner right?
It's hard to know.
Hard to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we can definitely keep you informed how the process is going.
Yep, great, thank you.
Okay, just to provide a little additional information on the application for the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity. Essentially, we, as part of the application, we requested a defined portion in Cass County, as well as all of Richland County, and including the community of Kindred. Kindred, we have received approval of our franchise with the city of Kindred. The city council approved that at their December 1st meeting. They notified us earlier this week that it was approved. I believe the paperwork is in, the franchise paperwork's in the mail that we have to execute and turn around in 30 days, and that it will be in effect. So. We expect to have that completed here in the near future. I'm going to kind of shift to the map a little bit as well, just to talk a little bit more about Cass County. And the area that we're requesting as part of this application in Cass County, really the pipeline is kind of roughly in the center of that section. So really we're looking for 2 to 4 miles on either side of that pipeline, knowing that we're going to have additional customer requests. Along the route, and typically if it's in 2 to 4 miles, depending on the number of customers or the size of the customer, it can be economical for us to serve those customers. So that's really why the methodology behind why we requested the area we did in Cass County really was following that route of the pipeline in Cass County. And then once the route gets to Kindred, it really starts to go more southwesterly and gets into Richland County. And in Richland County, we already serve the community of Wahpeton and that surrounding area through through Great Plains Natural Gas, and then Montana Dakota serves two industrial customers near Hankinson, also in Richland County, and then we're also hopeful to add the communities of Walcott and Colfax, which led us to just request the entire county, Richland County area, as part of this application. And that was really our methodology behind why we chose the areas we do. So we did.
Go ahead, Victor.
I was gonna say, so these maps, this is the area you're requesting the certificate of public needs and necessity for?
Correct.
The area in that kind of.
In the red box, correct. In the red dotted line, that is the areas and townships in Cass County that were requested.
Okay.
So, and it might be kind of worthy to note along that, the red line against West Fargo to the east, you know, that's approximately where the diversion project canal is going to be going in the future.
Where the east side of this red dotted line?
The east side of the red line, right between the red line and the city limits of West Fargo.
Okay.
That diversion canal going all around to the north side of Fargo is going to be right in that area from the maps that I've seen.
I have a question. So I understand, I realize you don't have the distribution of the franchise for the city of, what city is it? No, it's on I-94, 20 miles west of.
Oh, Castleton.
Castleton, you don't have, that's XL Industry.
Correct. And Mapleton is also served by XL Energy as well.
Are they pulling gas off of the WBI line?
I do not believe they are currently. Of the new Valley line. You know, the existing WBI line that before Valley, connected from Felton, ended right there near Mapleton. And there is a connection for Excel, and I know they do take volumes from WBI that way, but I don't think they take any volumes from the Valley project to date that I'm aware of.
Okay. And just kind of one final clarification on the area here. As far as you're aware, this does not conflict with Excel's territory that they already have a certificate for. I haven't looked into it myself. I guess I'd.
So Paul Sanderson worked with Jack Shue on, I guess, trying to figure out if there's anything. They were unable to find anything that, any certificates that had been issued in this area.
Okay. I would guess the certificates are pretty old and likely didn't go down to this level of detail. So I'll probably just kind of make sure they're aware of it in case they have any major concerns. But I think it makes sense to me.
Does that cover existing? Anything else on where existing CPCNs are? Because if not, I got a different question.
No, go ahead. It's all right.
Okay. So, do Horace or Oxbow or Davenport have natural gas?
Horace is served by Excel.
Okay.
I'm not sure about Davenport or Oxbow.
Well, I for sure wouldn't think Davenport is because it's further out there, but if not, they're right on. I don't know if Davenport is in this area or right on the edge of it, and Oxbow is clearly out of it, but not by much.
Right.
Would those be areas you'd want to catch, depending on where the pipeline was going, or?
Potentially. If there's, areas that we could serve, there could be as a potential that we may want to amend or I'm not sure exact process, amend this to add in additional areas if we can make it economical to get to customers, because we do want to serve any customers that we can economically serve, in this area and across our service territory.
It's really been a long time since I've been in Davenport. I don't recall. I don't know how much growth they've had and as Fargo has continued to grow.
I'm not sure. According to the census, the new census data, Kindred definitely is growing and has grown really fairly quickly. But even Walcott and Colfax showed population increases from the 2010 to the new censuses as well.
On what side of the division line would they be on?
Davenport's way to the west. It's on, yep, right on the west edge of your area here.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't really know if it's in or out, but.
I just found NSP actually does serve Horace. Those other couple I'm not seeing on the list. Oxbow is not on there for sure. Davenport's not on the list.
Yeah, we're going to be south. I think right south of Horace is where kind of that is going to be that dam area or gates or whatever they have as part of that diversion project. There's, you know, last time I was there, there was a lot of construction going on for that as well.
I guess so. It would seem to me if Davenport is not in this checked area, mm-hmm, it would seem to me, if you're interested, maybe adding a section, if this all comes together, of land where it is might be. That would be something I'd be interested in, mm-hmm, as well as Oxbow. I don't know about, I guess I don't really know why you didn't include the rest of that township and connect that, if it,
yeah,
had to do with the diversion or some, I was assuming that maybe they had gas from XL, but
yeah.
Anyway, I just threw that out as something I would be open to.
I think Davenport is in, but Oxbow, like you said, is out, and I think, you know, it might have been just that we didn't go over to Oxbow because the pipeline's really heading to the south at that point. It's going to get further and further away, so it might be some difficult economics to,
yeah,
get there.
Yeah.
And I think we really used the I-29 as a boundary.
Correct.
You know, that was kind of throwing some benchmarks out there, 94, 29, and so I think that was probably the main reason. And,
yep,
and like Larry said, once you get too far from the pipe, you need a pretty good-sized customer to make it happen.
And I know wherever you put a line, we're going to see something right on the other side.
Yeah.
I've never been to Davenport, but I haven't spent a lot of time in SOFA.
Yes, she's here all week.
I couldn't resist. Sorry.
Are they bedroom community?
They are.
It's interesting, and sometimes you have to be careful what you ask for, but. Okay, that's I would imagine there are going to be some interesting little slivers that aren't franchised, if you will, or declared a territory between what you have and what XL has. So I don't know the best way to go about that, but I also realize that for the most part, we're talking about just farmland. So there's not a large industrial customer. There isn't an anchor account like a Crystal Sugar out there to make it worthwhile to pick up, you know, a few hundred residential customers, which in itself probably isn't economical. But if you talk to our folks and that's what you're looking at. Okay.
Okay, I think that's everything I had prepared, but willing to entertain any other questions.
On the interruptible customers, the 18, you said 16 have agreed to move to firm service.
Mm-hmm.
How many times, just anecdotally, how many interruptions, what was the frequency of the interruptions for those, well, the 18, I guess?
Yeah. You know, we haven't seen any in the last couple of years.
Okay.
But prior to that, you know, especially maybe going back into some of the, I'm trying to remember when that polar vortex was, that 14 or 16, something like that, you know, we seen, you know, 15, 20 days that was impacting their operations, as well as even our interruptible customers in Minnesota, You know, a lot of those are grain drying customers, and they were drying at that time because it was an earlier cold snap, and, you know, they couldn't run at all. You know, what changed between then and now that has really been helping us is that Viking Transmission Company has actually been giving us additional pressure at our takeoff at Virgis. You know, instead of, you know, back in that time period, we were probably only seeing 630 pounds from them. That would give us 600 pounds in our line, where today we're seeing closer to 700 pounds. And so we're able to, you know, supply, you know, 75 more pounds of pressure, which does help us keep customers on longer. You know, and our MAOP of that transmission line is, I believe, 705 or 710. So, so well within our MAOP for that line. But that has really helped in the last few years, but all of those customers remember those other years when there was a lot of interruptions, and they also have a lot of desire to grow their load as well, especially two of the largest industrial customers there. You know, they really want to grow, and one is looking at probably in the next 3 to 5 years potentially getting off of coal as well and taking additional gas supplies. So they were looking into their future of their operations as well for this, as well as economic development in the Wahpeton area. Wahpeton, you know, has a lot of ability to attract value-added ag in that southeastern North Dakota, and there's been a few projects that have not come to fruition or located other areas. Was it solely not be able to get additional firm natural gas? No, but that was one of the primary factors, and they located elsewhere.
Yeah, it sounds like one, if not both, are food processors. One for sure. Possibly both. I can think of, probably guess who they both are, but one for sure. So their bills will actually go up, but that's
right.
16 out of the 18. Willing to accept that.
Correct.
By moving to firm. And then two, just want to keep the rates a touch lower. I can't imagine they're jumping up exponentially.
No, but it's definitely a cost increase, but yeah. It's also that, you know, they see the value of not having to shut down for those days, which right. There is a cost to them to do that, or a cost of a backup fuel as well. So once they look at that cost, knowing that they don't ever have to maintain a backup, we don't have to worry about, you know, curtailing our operations, sending employees home, or those types of things. You know, it was a good value for them at the price that it will cost them to take firm service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I can definitely see that it would have a limiting effect on how they run their operations, at least to some degree. Proceed with a degree of caution, if you will, be a bit inhibited.
And one thing that I would add. We anticipate that they will see a savings on their cost of gas compared to what they're paying. You know, we're able to utilize storage in our integrated system.
Yep.
Great Plains does have a very small storage field, but so most of the gas we buy is, you know, it's a little bit higher price. The Ventura price is kind of what we benchmark over there as opposed to the CIG on Montana Dakota system. So. There will be a little offset. I mean, they'll have a higher firm requirement, but there should be a little bit of an offset in terms of gas.
Sure.
That's a good point, Travis.
I was thinking, the couple that didn't sign, some businesses might not be as significantly impacted by getting cut off as others. And I suppose if this comes to fruition, the likelihood of them getting cut off will be a lot less with the system than it was before, so they'll benefit without changing anything. But I wanted to, as I listen to you and what I followed before, it seems to me, what I'm understanding is that if this comes together, Kindred would get added for sure, but what about Colfax and Walcott? Are those question marks at this point, or... Are those pretty certain or what?
We have met with the City Council of Walcott. We have not met with Colfax yet, but we intend to in the near future. You know, with the, you know, the distance we are from Walcott and Colfax, Colfax being a little bit further, Walcott being about the same as Kindred, they're not near the size of Kindred, so your density is a little bit less. And really, Walcott, it's going to come down to if, you know, there's a large grain dryer there. If they're interested, we'll hopefully be able to serve the maybe 30 to 40 homes that are there. That's about it in Walcott. And in Colfax, same thing. There's a large grain dryer, you know, and if they're interested in getting service, then we'll hopefully be able to serve, you know, the, you know, homes that are in Colfax. And there's also a school in Colfax, so...
So if they want it, it would appear that it's a good enough opportunity that you would go the distance that is required for those two.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then, so on the average year, not the really big years or the really small years, based on the amount of gas that you sell in Wahpeton and Breckenridge, run gas that all the customers use, if you're able to put this together, probably add those three communities, add those 16 interruptible customers, you know, get these new mm-hmm. firm contracts you've done, does this increase the amount of gas used in this footprint by 10% or 50%, or how much more gas would you see using on a normal year?
You know, the interruptible customers, you know, are already using gas, so it's just moving from one service level to the other, so that really wouldn't increase. So it would just be the increase, you know, for the additional customers along the route and those three communities, you know, we discussed.
Wasn't part of it that they want to grow? So their new contracts are probably for more than what they've been getting?
Yeah, it's just their contract is to take all of their gas service, their existing or any new additional load requirements as firm. So we don't know exactly what the amount will be. So it's really tough for me to maybe say a percentage of how much more gas will supply into southeastern North Dakota, unless Travis maybe has a better idea.
I thought your question was a little going a different direction, but on Montana Dakota's system, I think we ship out about 36 million decatherms a year. And on Wahpeton, that whole system is right around 1 to 1.5 million decatherms. And like Larry said, that's part of the Great Plains system. That'll become part of our integrated Montana-Dakota system. So we will see an increase in our Montana-Dakota footprint, you know, by a million plus as a total of about 36 million. So,
no, what the number, and now with that number in mind, so if I take the middle of that, if they average 1.25 million now, what you're thinking that it will be when you add this area and those customers become firm, but I'm understanding you don't really have that answer.
I don't think we have anything firm commitments, and even Kindred by itself isn't a significant load. You know, it'll be enough to support that system, but, you know, it's not a tremendous increase.
You know, thank you.
It's fair to say that the project will incentivize industrial growth, value-added ag growth, not guarantee it'll happen, but we'll get incentives for operations to look at those locations. Do you have anything, maybe it's just anecdotally, and if you don't, but what is the rate of adoption when you've gone into new communities without natural gas service? They're heating their homes with propane, some are on electric heat. It's not that you go in and that there are 300 homes or 400 homes in the community, then 6 months later they're all on natural gas, but incrementally, do you have any numbers? Anecdotally, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, typically we kind of build our model around 40% adoption rate in year one.
Okay.
And then, you know, picking up, you know, additional 5 or 10% in the next, you know, year two, year three. But typically, you know, even if you look back over a 10-year period, you're probably only going to see a total saturation somewhere in that 65 to 70% okay. of the customers over 10 years. You know, where you know, if you're there when the homes are being built, you know, like in the new subdivisions, you're probably getting 98 or 99%. So, so there's a little bit difference there.
Industrial, the industrial side of the rate of adoption would...
Yeah, yeah. The larger users are the first, they have the most savings.
Yeah.
You know, typically we'll get, you know, a higher saturation of them.
Sure.
Significantly higher. But from the residential, small commercial, it's kind of that 40% in year one. And that's usually what we build our model around as we determine what that cost participation amount would be from the customers to get natural gas to them.
Do you do anything, and I know I see the flyers in my bills, but I think it's a third party that's, I'm guessing, maybe paying for some space in your billing to, or maybe there's a partnership of some kind for energy efficient furnaces, that type of thing. Do you have any type of a program when you go into a new community to help incentivize low-income households, for example, to look at making the switch, because they don't necessarily have the, I don't even know what is running these days, 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 to put a furnace in, maybe that's high, maybe it's not, or is it that?
Yeah, it's for a high-efficiency furnace, it's probably around that $6,500.
Okay.
For a high-efficiency furnace.
So do you do anything from a billing standpoint, or do you just stay out of that, and that's up to them?
Yeah, we currently don't have any, you know, energy efficiency rebates or anything like that for furnaces or, you know, in North Dakota. We don't have any other programs, you know, to help with the funding of the furnace. I know there is, you know, through the... community action agencies, you know, they have programs for low income, furnace replacements, these types of things. And I believe there was an instance of that in Milner, you know, to where as part of that, they helped out with getting, you know, because they needed to do emergency furnace replacement and they wanted to get them on gas. I believe they did, just because we had some conversations with the agency because they had questions regarding it. But no official program for a furnace replacement or a conversion.
Yeah, it's just, it's a challenge. You know, obviously a lot of households, especially low income, would love to reduce their energy costs by 35, 40, 45%. That might be getting a little on the high side, or 50, I don't know, you know, what the exact number is, but they don't have $6,500 to make the investment in it.
To switch it over. I mean, if they have a propane furnace, you know, it can be a little bit less just converting it.
Sure,
but
sure.
A replacement is going to cost you that $6,000, $6,500. But usually a furnace can be converted, you know, maybe $150 to $300, depending on the type of furnace.
Oh, really?
It's really just an orifice kit in most furnaces that they change out
like
from natural gas to propane.
It's like a gas range, whether it's a little kit to the little... brass fitting or whatever.
A little brass orifice. You know, but some furnace manufacturers, you have to do a few other things, so the cost goes up maybe to $300. But usually the conversion of a propane furnace is fairly inexpensive.
Okay. Victor, do we have everything on the record?
I have a number of questions, if I may. Okay. So I was just looking at NSP's territory. They claim to have to serve unincorporated communities in Cass County. I just noticed on the list. I don't know where that comes from, so I'll need some verification of where that comes from and talk to Jack. So that's my only concern with that piece of it. You mentioned Kindred City Council has approved your franchise. You just need to do the paperwork. Do they have a fee associated with that, franchise fee?
To my knowledge, they did not propose a fee at this time.
Okay. But for any of these communities, any franchise fees they would charge, you would pass those along to the customers and those?
I believe that's what we typically do, Travis, correct?
Other than Hattiger, we have been listed
at Hattiger. Okay, just making sure on that. You're not proposing any tariff revisions as part of this for serving those communities? Would that come later? Once you get closer to that,
if we need any tariff provisions, you know, I think 2024 is the in-service date.
Right.
I don't know that we're anticipating anything unless we do a kind of a special
that's kind of what I had in mind, is something along those lines. And then would these be customers of MDU Gas or Great Plains Gas?
They would be Montana Dakota.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then since we're kind of switching their gas usage from the existing Great Plains system to the MDU system, would this allow one cost of gas adjustment for the entire MDU Great Plains system?
So Minnesota then would be on their own, and all of North Dakota. All of North Dakota would be one cost of gas.
Okay, so that would kind of simplify those to a certain degree.
Correct.
And then I would expect that that kind of changes the supply mixture, your availability to gas storage, so that's likely going to reduce the cost of gas adjustment for the Great Plains North Dakota system on the whole, kind of on average.
That's what we're anticipating.
Okay. And then would that potentially lead to an increase in MDU customers' natural gas cost gas adjustment, just because there's, therefore, on a percentage basis, a slightly less percent available of the storage and those kind of things to them?
We're not anticipating much of a difference. There will be an increase in demand, but we've got all of those, or 16 of the 18 have agreed to go firm. So, you know, we're anticipating it would be a very minimal change in the cost of gas for Montana Dakota. Again, you mentioned storage.
Yep.
You know, we have a limit on what we can utilize for storage.
Right.
And if you add more gas requirements, obviously that becomes a smaller percent.
Sure.
You know, we've been looking at this for a few years, and, you know, cost of gas was so cheap for so long. And, you know, now there's a little different dynamic, but we still see the differential between Venture and the CIG. And so, you know, what we're estimating is a very minimal impact on Montana Dakota's system and a somewhat of a savings for Great Plains customers.
Okay. I think that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. I have one follow-up question on the territories. That seems to be the greatest potential point for some problems, with XL being kind of right there. How have you coordinated with them, or how does that happen with your territory versus theirs in establishing kind of the boundary you're asking for?
And so I think in terms of, you know, preparing our application, Paul Sanderson did the legwork for us to see if any of this territory had been certified, if you will. And like I say, I think he worked with Jack. They were unable to see that any of this area had been certified before. So that's, we really, I don't know that we worked with Excel at all.
Okay.
And again, you know, our goal was, here's the pipe. We wanted a little buffer on each side of it. Mm-hmm. We find that whenever, you know, whether it's to Bobcat or, you know, you get people along the route saying, hey, I've got, you know, especially grain dryers, they're in the middle of nowhere, generally speaking, and they can burn a lot of gas in a short time. So they want access to natural gas if they can. So that was kind of our goal, was just to get on, you know, like Larry said, on either side of it. So anything within that area, you know, if we can do it economically, that would be our goal.
Okay.
And I guess I would agree. That's probably the biggest potential hang-up on this one. I'll do some legwork and confirm what Jack was able to find on that. NSP has really had their opportunity to do something with this procedurally, but I just want to make sure we're not kind of crossing ourselves in what we've done in the past. I know it's likely going to be a very old order that was granting that Certificate of Public Means and Necessity to them, and those most of the time were very specific. So likely it's not going to be a problem, but I'll kind of double check that piece of it. Otherwise, I agree. I don't see any other.
Okay.
I would suspect it's not just NSP, but the other Dakota Natural Gas, for example, but NSPA, I would suspect they haven't reached out to you or maybe pushed into new areas either. It almost becomes a de facto first come, first serve, but if you put together a business plan and it works economically, then you process it through the commission, I think it does, to your point, become a fair fight, so to speak. Well, but we just want to make sure we're not, again, overlapping.
That's my only concern. I think Dakota Natural Gas kind of moved into a little bit of their old territory lots of years ago.
I would imagine neither party or Dakota, for example, really chomping up a bit to go to a potential competitor and say they wouldn't think, because then they're going to scramble to put their plan together. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes it does seem like getting a certificate for an area like this should kind of include a requirement to serve at least at some level. I know it doesn't really seem to ever be the case with gas. Electric.
But. I think it is. From what I'm recollecting, if you're granted a certificate of public convenience and necessity, you are granted the ability to serve, but you also have the requirement to serve. But that doesn't speak to the cost. So if a customer within anywhere in there could say, I want service, but that may mean that customer has to pay $500,000 to get the pipe to them.
Okay, so then it's important probably to look at XL's lines closely, because with that being the thought, to the west, there's all this open ground, so this point doesn't really matter. But on the east, if you don't want to draw a line now that's, say, a mile away from XL's line and leave something that everyone knows would never be something big enough that anyone would come in and get a certificate to serve that. It seems to me when they're so close that there's only open ground in between, they ought to then be pushed together and connected.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? You're good, Victor?
I'm good, thank you.
Company, anything else to add for the record?
I don't believe so.
All right. Is there any objection to all of the materials, the recording, being used as part of the official record on which we make a decision?
No objection.
No objection from staff.
Excellent. All right. Then that's how it will be treated. That record will include all the paper materials and the recorded version of the informal hearing today. All right, if there's no other matters for the record, then this informal will be closed. Thank you.